Vous avez remarqué? Les Jeux Olympiques et Paralympiques approchent à grands pas. Ça va être un moment génial, de fête, de célébration évidemment. Et je ne sais pas dans vos cercles, mais de mon côté, une bonne partie de mes amis parisiens préparent leurs vacances d'été et se posent la question de mettre leur appartement sur Airbnb à cette occasion. Ça pourrait financer au moins en partie leurs vacances, alors ça tombe sous le sens qu'ils y pensent. De mon côté, c'est certain, je serai à Lisbonne, donc mon appartement parisien, dont je suis propriétaire, sera sur Airbnb pour cet été, pendant les Jeux Olympiques et Paralympiques. D'ailleurs, ça me permettra de financer, en partie, mes vacances. Et vous? Imaginez ce que vous pourriez faire avec ce supplément de revenus. En réalité, votre logement pourrait rapporter plus que vous ne le pensez. Découvrez combien sur airbnb.fr/hôte. C'est airbnb.fr/hôte, H-O-T-E. Allez, place à l'épisode maintenant.
I don't know if you've listened to the episode 51 about happiness with Mo Godat, but this is one of the most listened to episodes of my podcast. Quite amazing content. So I decided to receive Mo again, but this time to talk about this new spirituality of society. Spirituality may sound kind of weird to some of you, but actually, if you're looking in a sense of your life, if you are interested in self-development, I'm quite sure this podcast will talk directly to your heart. So I'll let you listen to it. Allez, venons. C'est parti. Hello, Mo. It's been a while. It's been a while that we've been talking together. We've been recording together an episode about happiness, and actually that's the most listened episode on my podcast. Thank you for that. Yeah,
oh, that's great news. Yeah, it shows what people are looking for.
Yeah, amongst the 85 episodes, that's the most listened to episode. Oh my God. Great.
I'm honored. Thank you.
So we are not together right now. You're in Dominican Republic.
Yes. Yes, I am.
And the subject I wanted to talk about with you is spirituality, because it's been a while that I'm thinking that the world needs a new spirituality somehow, like not specifically based on a religion, but based on how we envision life and success and, you know, the subjects we talked about. And I was wondering who would be the best person to talk about that. And I thought, well, Mo would be just perfect to talk about what's the new spirituality of the humankind, or at least the Occidental world humankind should be.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm definitely not the best person for that, but let's give it a try.
Let's give it a try then.
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on how you define spirituality. Huh? So there are so many brand names that we live with in our world that are actually very, you know, truly stripped of their true value. You know, when we describe something with a word, we truly dilute its essence. Huh? So if I use the word tower. There are many towers around the world. You know, so can you compare the Eiffel Tower to the whatever residential tower that someone built in here in Cabarete that is four stories high, huh? Uh-huh. But we use the word tower, and in doing so, we lose the essence of what the word actually means. I think spirituality is probably one of the most misused words in our world today. You know, it really is misunderstood. It's mixed up with the word religion. It was sort of restricted to the religious institutions for many, many years, that if you want to be spiritual, you have to come through us. And now perhaps it's being restricted to California, you know, with the white flowy dresses. And yeah, if you want to be spiritual, let us show you what spirituality is. And you know, what really is spirituality? And because of my engineering approach to things, I tend to always start with an accurate definition that I can associate with. Uh-huh. And so in my own personal definition of spirituality, it comes from spirit. And spirit is the religious word used to describe the other part of you. And I think that's really where the core of the conversation starts. I mean, is this the extent of us? Is our physical form the total of who we are? Or is there more to the human than just our physical form. And if there is, whether you want to call it a spirit or you want to call it anything else, it doesn't matter. Spirituality would be how do you relate to that other part of you, to that other to find that completeness of you that goes beyond just the physical into the spiritual, if you want. On the same token, you would also realize that if there is more to us than our physical form, then there could be more to everything physical than just the physical. There could be more to the universe than just its physical elements. There could be something bigger than all of us, which in religion is called the divine or God mm-hmm. or Allah or whatever it is that you want to call it. And the views of it are massively varied if you actually study across religions. And again, if there is something bigger than all of us, then how do we relate to it? And that's what spirituality, in my definition, is all about.
Interesting. So in my perspective, I feel like we as human are kind of disconnect with this other part of us, but also this other part of the world. Like we tend to consider nature, and by nature I mean vegetation, but also animals, whatever is living but human, and even somehow humans as a means to do something. So we consume the world somehow, and we consume nature, and we consume animals. We consider them as a raw materials, not really as another part of us. If you know what I mean, like, and also in this new spirituality that I'm thinking about, it's probably about how we do consider success. You know, we talked about that together, but within a year I was thinking, and also because of the people that I've been receiving here on my podcast, that it's a lot about cash flow, but mm-hmm. there's so much more than cash flow. It can be an invite of me. Another person that I invited was like, oh yeah, I reduced my cash flow, but I augmented my forest flow, my surf flow. You know what I mean? And it's probably this balance that we need to consider also.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to start, you know, to reflect and say, we as humans, no one wakes up in the morning to screw up, okay? Every single one of us is trying to achieve the best they can with the information that they were given in terms of what it is that you define the best as. Unfortunately, because of our highly capitalist, highly consumer-driven world, you know, because of marketing and advertising, and I say that with love and respect for the podcast, but the idea is that we are constantly telling people that there is one way to define success in life. There is one way to define beauty. There is one way to define achievement. And unfortunately, none of that is actually true at all. I mean, you go around the world and you look at all of the different shapes and forms and features of humans that are all beautiful in the eyes of a specific person with a specific taste, right? And you start to realize that perhaps the commonly defined approach to what success is probably flawed. And it's actually, I would say it's definitely flawed. So I was the victim of that. I spent the early years of my life, perhaps the first 25 years of my life, which in many ways are the most productive years of anyone's life in terms of energy and effort and so on, hopefully to be compensated for by wisdom in the later years. Mm-hmm. But so much of my energy and effort was put behind making money, growing my title, achieving net worth that is measured in dollar signs. Mm-hmm. Truth is, you know, my mission is 1 billion happy. And I actually often publicly tell people that, you know, imagine if by the end of my life, I managed to provide a message of happiness to a billion people, lost every dollar I have ever earned working at Google, and basically had enough money left to buy one more Pink Floyd t-shirts at the t-shirt at $19.99 before I die, right? Would you consider that success? Would you consider that success? A billion happy people instead of $1 billion, would that be considered success? Now, it takes us back to spirituality, Greg. And the idea is that most of the spiritual and religious teachings of humanity have always targeted only two things. I've studied across every spiritual, every religious teaching that you can ever find. They always go back to two things. One is alleviating your own suffering, mm-hmm. and the other is alleviating the suffering of others. Mm-hmm. So basically, every religion, if you drop everything that was man-made, that was added by the saints and the teachers and that, right? That wasn't really the core message of a religion or a spiritual teaching. It was simply about, can we make you go through this life in the best possible way so that you don't suffer? And can we teach you the compassion so that you can make others succeed and find happiness so that they don't suffer, okay? And if you take that as the core of spirituality, then success becomes a very, very, very different definition.
Totally, and I think going back to your example with your Pink Floyd t-shirt, I guess people, when they, try to get as much dollars as they yeah. can. They probably also think about their children and thinking, okay, I need to give them something.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably what people are thinking about when they're earning money.
Isn't that stupid? I mean, I know this sounds horrible if I say this, but I succeeded in life. In the material world, I succeeded. I had planned everything for my son Ali. I had his tuition set aside. I bought up, properties for him so that he can have passive income when he graduates. I even started businesses for him so that when he graduates, he can run them. And as he changed majors three times in his university years, I would start another business every time. You know, that's how committed I was to give my son a life a comfortable life as he graduates. And then he left us, right? Due to a totally unexpected human error in a simple medical operation, Ali died, right? Where do we get the illusion that we're actually safe with more money? I never understood that. I mean, I'll tell you statistically, the amount of money that was stolen from me was always bigger as a percentage the more my net worth was. So, when I had no money at all, maybe a pickpocket took some of my cash from my pocket when I was in the metro, uh-huh. right? When I had, a lot of money and cars, people stole my cars, right?
Yeah.
Where do we get the illusion that if I have all the money in the world, I can cure a cancer if I get diagnosed? Where do I get the illusion that if I have all the money in the world, I'm not going to make a simple wrong investment and end up with no money at all? I'm trying to say, and I say that with an optimistic view, actually, a lot of the spiritual teachings will tell you that happiness and peacefulness are found in seeing the truth, okay? The truth of our life is it's a video game. It's full of challenges. It is full of challenges. Of course, I wouldn't dare say that truth is a video game, but the truth is it's like a video game, right? There will always be a challenge because that's the only way the game becomes worth playing, right? And those challenges are actually not solved by collecting more coins on the way. They are solved by collecting the skill that enables you to solve the challenges even in the absence of coins. And that's the whole trick. Huh? The whole trick is, what should you collect as you come across life? Should you collect more money that is unguaranteed, that will be slipping away, that is actually depreciating because of the currency exchange rates all the time? The declining purchasing powers, the growing profitability of the consumer goods establishment and the product building establishments? Or should you collect the skills to be able to navigate a challenging situation, regardless of what life throws at you? The skills of actually finding peace, finding your inner anchor as things change around you, like a true video gamer. A true video gamer, if you shake for a second while challenges are thrown at you, you lost a small second that is important for you to untangle yourself from the situation. So isn't that what we should collect? Shouldn't we count through life that we have a net worth of spiritual, peaceful, skillful abilities to navigate the world and then let the world throw whatever it wants at us?
And actually, talking about the relationship between parents and children, I also feel like the child will be much richer with wisdom than with money. Money can make you a very sad kid somehow. And I know some.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the child is already wise until we spoil their wisdom. Children are pure. They're happy. They're innocent. They're honest. They're playing. And while they're playing, they're incredibly creative. They're incredibly productive. They're putting in endless energy. And then we tell them, stop all of this. You know, this is a waste of time. You need to get serious. Mm-hmm. Like, what's serious? I'm six, you know. But then you say, seriously, I mean, remember, huh? All of us went through this. And then they put you in school and they say, stop doing all that you know how to do as instinctively as you are as a human. And let's do things differently. Now, sit in a classroom, listen for 8 hours a day, never object to the stupid things that the teacher is saying. And if you hate social studies, it doesn't really matter. Just spend your life learning social studies anyway. Right? And then we tell those children to excel in life. Now, of course, many of us, believe it or not, objected for a day or a month, or some of us for the entire duration of our teenage or whatever that is, trying to say, guys, this is not how I'm supposed to live. But then we eventually all conform because the system is so strong. Mm-hmm. Children are already wise. We spoil them by the preconceived beliefs that we have built around the modern world. By doing that, we deny them the right from exploring their own world, their own capabilities, their own skills, their own talents, and perhaps their own spirituality. One of the biggest myths in the world is that to be religious is to follow Jesus or Muhammad or Buddha. No, we all follow religions. Even atheists follow religions. Even capitalists follow religions. We just call them different things. But the reality is, everyone that aligns so closely with one of those teachings is just a fanatic. It's like, following Manchester United as a football fan, you basically say, no, I am a very, very avid fan of, Christianity or Buddhism, or I am a very avid fan of atheism, or I'm a very avid fan of just making money, or I'm an avid fan of making my opinion heard and, the blind freedom that the West tries to propagate around the world. And the reality is, none of them is fully right and none of them is fully wrong. And the question is any of them really you? Who is the real you?
Totally. And actually, I was thinking while you're talking, because I know you talked today at a conference in Paris called Sustainable Brands. And yes. I actually received the founder of the conference on that podcast. And I also feel like this mindset, this spirituality somehow is more sustainable than the one that is made out of dollars and possessions and, having more and more and more, which eventually doesn't bring you happiness or, absolutely. I mean, you can call it success if you like, but I mean, not you, but I mean, people listening, they can call it success if they like, but eventually it doesn't work like that. I mean, I'm not talking about the people who can't eat while they are hungry, but beside that, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, even when you think of the people that can't eat because they're hungry, it's an issue of lack of spirituality, believe it or not. Huh? Spirituality, not religion. But remember, huh? So in spirituality, when you know deep inside you that there is more to you than this physical form, you realize that you're connected to everyone else. I was writing about this today. I'm almost finishing my next book. I was writing about the fact that growing up in Egypt, even though we didn't have social security, we didn't have health insurance, we didn't have all of the things that the West demands of their governments and retirement and what have you, we had that constant peace in us because we knew that if something went wrong for me, my cousins, my best friends, my family will take care of me, right? We were much bigger than one person. And the individualism of the West has taken that away from all of us. Now, part of that spiritual approach is to realize I'm not an individual. I am. There is so much more to me than this physical form that is limited by the boundaries of my skin. And what is more for me there is something that links to everyone else. It's a community, not an individual. And when you really start to internalize that, then you recognize that actually there is not much to fear. There is not much to worry about. Because at least you have people who have your back. Now, this is one side of the story. The other more important side of the story, if you ask me, is, so go back to that concept of being spiritual. And I'll share my own personal example, and I know some people will find that very weird. I was born a Muslim, and Islam is a conformative religion, right? It's like, you do things as we tell you, because we have consulted with God, we've done our research, and we know exactly how you should do everything from the minute you wake up to the minute you die, and that way you will end up in heaven. Now, I'm not against that, by the way, but I actually don't think that this is the purpose of it at all. I think the purpose is for you to seek and search and find your own truth. So at age 16, I started to tell myself, perhaps if I'm going to spend the rest of my life confirming, I might as well actually do the math of it. And so I basically did what I call the mathematics of God, or the mathematics of design, if you want, which is found in my book, Soul for Happy. I won't bore you with it, but I came to a point where I just, from a mathematical point of view, I told myself there is a much higher probability that there is a design behind our universe than there is a probability that everything happened through randomness and constant trial and error, okay? I'm not saying there isn't evolution, but I'm saying that evolution is actually part of the design. Now, when I arrived at that, my entire life shifted. I was 16 at the time. And then I told myself, look at this. If I actually question what they tell me, I can come to a more solid belief in what I actually believe. And from there, I started to study every religion on earth. I read in so many of them, and they're all so beautiful, yet they're all corrupt in a way or another. Mm-hmm. There is a beautiful core in every one of them, and there is a lot of man-made, man-inserted rules and regulations, if you want. As you know, an emotional person would take this and say, you know what, screw this. I don't want to follow it. It has man-made rules. I don't want to follow anybody. I am a free person. A wiser person would say, perhaps I should find the beautiful core, because that's an interesting way of finding my spirituality, and then drop everything else that is not part of that beautiful core. And I engaged in years of doing this, looking at my own religion, Islam, you know, trying to find what of it is a beautiful core message and what of it is man-made. Looked at Christianity, looked at Buddhism, looked at Hinduism, looked at Taoism, and so on and so forth. And every one of them has the beauty and the corruption, right? Take all of them together and you will find your own personal religion, the Gregology of life, right? And that would be your own spirituality. I even learned from an atheist view to question everything. I learned from an atheist view that maybe perhaps the divine is not actually fully engaged in everyday decisions of our life. A game designer doesn't actually come and impact your way of playing the game on day-to-day basis. You know, when the game is designed, you're the one that's playing, right? The trick here is, as an individual, can you allow yourself to not be influenced by anything that you're told, including the religious views and the views that say religion is wrong? Can you find the beauty in everything, in every one of those views?
And I'm wondering, maybe that's a tricky question, but do you think that you need to have experienced wealth to come back to that spirituality that is, well, actually, I've been there, And I can tell you it's not working. It's making me think of, you know, that book Thrive, that, yeah. The you know, the book from the person who created the Huffington Post, Ariana. Well, she achieved all of that. She made children. She was a millionaire and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And eventually she was so sad. And I was wondering, do you think that you need to have that experience of wealth to realize that eventually this is just not working?
Well, unfortunately, we humans are stubborn. I mean, it's easier to try something for yourself and then say, it's not working. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's so much more efficient if you don't, you know, if you just take the shortcut, if you just really trust in the experience of others and learn from observing. So there are two types of learners in the world. There are those who learn from observing others do something, and there are those who learn from actually doing it themselves. And those who value that experience of doing it themselves, whatever it is that you're going to tell them, they'll say, I don't believe you. Okay? I have to admit to you that it's a bit of a teenage approach to say, I don't believe you, I have to try it myself. And mm-hmm. as I became more and more, as I became older and perhaps a little slower and, you know, started to not lose energy, but direct my energy more efficiently, I started to actually, you know, take what others teach me very, very seriously. I don't take it on face value. I don't accept it blindly. But I, one of my, hopefully my future books within 2020 is a book that I call Compartment 2, which basically allows me to take knowledge that is transferred to me and put it in one of three compartments, instead of just the two compartments that were normally taught at school. In school, we are taught that something is either right or wrong, that something is, you know, good or bad, that something is accepted by me or rejected by me. And the reality is that 99% of life, I mean, don't take the number accurately, mm-hmm. but the majority of life is neither good or bad, is neither right or wrong. It's just somewhere in the middle, in the grayscale. And I call that compartment two. And so in my approach to life, I try to define that something is either in compartment one, in my limited perception of life, it's 100% correct, or it's very, very likely to be correct. Or it's in compartment three, it's very likely to be not correct. But if it is in compartment two, I tell myself, perhaps there is a possibility that it is correct and a possibility that it isn't. And maybe I should go through life solving for both. I should, I had an interesting conversation with a Buddhist friend where, you know, the Buddhist faith believes, or the Buddhist philosophy believes in karma and reincarnation. Mm-hmm. And I asked and I said, look, I don't have a position for or against reincarnation. I couldn't find the scientific proof for or against it. But what if it wasn't true? What if it was in compartment two? Okay. What if it wasn't surely true or surely not true? How would the entire philosophy change? And it's such an interesting question. When you go through life, every part of your life, assuming that something could be A or B, not either A or B. You could probably solve your life in so many different ways and take many more exciting paths through life as you just allow yourself the right to debate that something that you were told is right actually isn't.
So it's super interesting. Like, would it be the advice that you give to people, like when they wonder about how they should manage their life? And a lot of people, I feel, are very centered on the present, also self-centered somehow, mm-hmm. wondering what their mission on the planet is or why they're here. I think this spirituality somehow, which is, again, not specifically connected to religion, religion is growing also. Every religion is growing. Every mm-hmm. tribes of religion is growing. But in the West, at least, religion is kind of down. Mm-hmm. And people are searching for some truth. And that's probably why they are trying to be happy. They are really searching. So what would be your major advice? Like to look at life not as black and white, but as a variety of gray?
Yeah, to recognize that there is always something new that you don't know. That, you know, like Confucius says, that true wisdom is to recognize your own ignorance. And in, you know, in reality, we don't know much at all. I mean, I am a highly scientific person. I study science to a deep, deep level, and I keep up with all of the scientific discoveries. And even in science, even though the brand is, hey, we know the truth, the brand is absolutely wrong. Science itself constantly changes the truth that they have stated just 10 years ago, right? Huh. From the earth is flat to the earth is round, but it's the center of all heavenly objects, to the earth is actually not even round, it's spherical. And it's just revolving around the earth around the sun in an ellipse, to the recognition that it's actually not in an ellipse at all, that it's moving around the sun as the sun is moving and the universe is expanding. And nobody actually has any clue what the path of Earth in the universe is because of all of those intricate movements, right? Now, think about all of this and tell yourself, I don't know. And there is a joy in not knowing. And there is a joy in revisiting everything I've been taught from, you know, the typical Frenchmanship of, I need to be sophisticated and elegant and say, poof, no, I don't like everything to start. Maybe this is the wrong education, okay? All the way to my life is about this and nothing more, okay? And if you start to revisit all of this and recognize that as a being, you're much more than your physical self, okay? That you are part of a big community of being that includes everything around you and that your life is so dependent on all of this. I think this is something that we recognize more and more with global epidemics like global warming, mm-hmm. that none of us can survive alone anymore because we're together as a community destroying our habitat for all of us, right? If you start to recognize all of this, your approach to life becomes very, very different. Your approach to life becomes, this is not just about me, this is about all of us. And if I can help the universe, perhaps the universe will help me back. And when you start to think about that, maybe life's purpose becomes a different definition, okay? Maybe it doesn't become one more car or a better car or a slightly bigger apartment. Maybe it becomes an impact on all of us, and on all that we love around us. And maybe that would change the way we live and work and give.
Interesting. And you were saying that you're writing a new book, you almost finished. Can we have the pitch of it or
pitch? I'm really happy with this one. This one is called the Little Voice in Your Head. Uh-huh. Which is an expansion of a small concept I discussed in Soul for Happy, which basically starts from the statement that your thoughts are not you. This little voice in your head is not you. It's simply a biological function that is run by your brain. And if it is, the core reason for all unhappiness are thoughts that we think, then maybe we should learn to think better. And so in that book, I use a lot of techniques from, you know, either neuroscience or problem solving, but mainly an understanding of how the brain works as a machine, not as a piece of meat, right? I basically split the brain, if you want, into modules of software, in a simplified way, saying module one does A, B, and C, module two does X, Y, and Z, and then show you where those modules are going wrong and perhaps how you can correct them. How, you know, for example, we're depending more in this materialistic world on our left brain hemisphere than our right brain hemisphere, and how that is, you know, so unfair to the feminine, how it's so unfair to the planet, what we can, you know, how it can lead to your unhappiness and how can we correct it, you know, how the parasympathetic nervous system is not engaged because we're using our sympathetic nervous system to deal with all of the stresses of the modern world, this is a module that we can actually hack into and change, and that would make us happier. So all of the different components of that little voice in your head and how it operates. I'm really happy with the progress so far. I think readers will hopefully be enjoying this.
Yeah, that's a very good pitch, actually. And so this podcast called Vlan, and I would like to know what you would open the door to or what you would shut the door to.
Currently in my life, I think the biggest door I have opened is, very interestingly, a door that allows me to become more feminine. Uh-huh. That has nothing to do with my gender. It has nothing to do with being a man or a woman. It just has a lot to do with opening up to using more of my feminine qualities in the world. So being me, an engineer, raised in the Middle East, and an executive, I definitely used more of my left brain, more of my masculine qualities in life to get to where I am today. And I think around 4 years ago, I recognized, 4.5 years ago, I recognized that to ascend even further, I think the feminine qualities, you know, intuition, empathy, the ability to have resilience, to have flow, are things that I want to have more of in my life. This is what I'm totally open to. What I am not open to is rigidity, is the idea that something is not open for conversation. Everything to me is, because of that constant flow, believe it or not, everything to me is in constant evolution. I build concepts, I write them down in a book, and then a few weeks later, I revisit them because I learn a little more and a little more and a little more. And it's an incredible experience of really living and enjoying life rather than thinking that we figured it out and, you know, behaving based on an arrogance that we know it all.
Wow. Thank you, Mo, for all that wisdom.
Oh, my God. Thank you for the opportunity. I love to be on your podcast. I hope to be in Paris soon. My plans are in summer, so my hope is maybe we can meet again then.
I would very enjoy that. Maybe we can have a live recording somehow.
I would love that. But I think for that, our listeners will have to make this a successful episode as well. So yeah, I ask them to help us do that and
exactly.
Spread the message. and meanwhile, hopefully spread the message of happiness. You know, still my number one mission so far is 1 billion happy. So please help me by prioritizing your own happiness and just teaching others what you learn about happiness. I think our world needs that most today.
Totally, totally. Thank you very much, Mo.
You're so welcome. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thank you so much.
Merci d'avoir écouté Vlan. Si vous avez aimé l'émission, vous pouvez le dire avec